Amen. Thank you, Stephen. And I would also like to wish all you guys out there happy Father's Day in person. You made it to church. That's awesome. You didn't blow off church and go golf. You came here, so we hope that it's a blessing to you. And if you're online joining us, thank you for tuning in as well. Father's Day can be tricky. It can be tricky. As I've thought about, you know, speaking on the topic today, what do I want to say and what should I say? And it's a little different than Mother's Day. You know, and the temptation is different. It's funny because Mother's Day, thank you, we bless you. And then typical Father's Day messages, you need to try harder and do better, you know. And it's like, oh, that was fun. Let me go hear that again. So I don't want to do that. Want to take a little different approach. But let me just say this. I had a great dad, and I'm super thankful for my dad. He was a very quiet engineer type, so he wasn't taking over the airwaves if there's a room of people talking. But he was one of those guys that if he was going to say something, it was worth listening to. And you'd even say, what? And he'd say it again. It's like, well, okay, that's helpful. We did a lot of stuff together growing up, me and my dad. We did hobbies together, and we would always do it together, which was kind of cool, right? I mean, we took karate together. We took boxing together. I remember when I was into photography, and so he got into it, and we got a dark room and took pictures together, and even when I remember he had this van. And you buy the shell back in the day, and you buy a conversion kit, you know, the wood paneling sides and all that kind of, and I was there out there with him with the, you know, the drill and all that kind of stuff. And so, and unfortunately, my mom and dad, they got divorced when I was 17. And so that was kind of interesting because I was used to, I remember even I had surgery on my knee, and he would get up in the morning, help me get dressed and take me to school. On crutches and stuff. So we were close, but then when they got divorced, he remarried, and he just kind of moved on. I never really saw him again. And as I think back to that, it was such a vacancy. It wasn't like I needed to see him because I needed help. I was old enough by then. I was 18, 19. But it was just his presence. Even though it was quiet, and even though it wasn't domineering, it was powerful. Powerful to me, to where I was like, wow, this is wild. I feel the power of powerlessness of him not being there. And this isn't just my experience. This isn't just something that maybe was unique to me. Statistics play this out when it comes to dads being in their homes. And it's significant. 85% of youth in prison are from fatherless homes. That's high, man. 85%. Children in fatherless homes are 4 times more likely to live in poverty. Fatherless children have 71% higher dropout rate in high school. 90% of children expelled from school are from fatherless homes. 90%. That connection, that influence is significant. 59% of children from fatherless homes experience depression. I could go on and on. There's 144 stats here as it relates to the impact and power of a dad. 53% of youth pregnancies occur in fatherless homes. So what is that? What is that significance? What is that power there? I want to talk about that this morning, and I hope it's an encouragement to you dads and moms and kids to reflect on this. I've entitled this morning's message, Dad Power, and we're going to look at why fathers are so important. If you're here on Mother's Day, you remember we talked about why moms are so important. And you'll see, if you remember that message, it's different. And God set it up that way. We're going to be looking at 1 Thessalonians 2, verses 10 to 12. Kind of a unique passage that you don't typically turn to on Father's Day, but you'll see why I did. But let me give you a little backstory to 1 Thessalonians, since we haven't been studying through that. It's a church, and Paul started it. He planted that church with Silas and Timothy. On one of his missionary journeys, he came into Thessalonica, which is now part of Greece today. And he did as Paul always does. He reasoned in the synagogues on the Sabbath. And we're told in Acts chapter 17 is kind of where we get the backstory of the Thessalonian church. He was there for like three Sabbaths. So not very long. He wasn't there for years. He was there for weeks, maybe a couple months. So within that time, he was able to plant a church. But when the Christians started getting together, there was a lot of persecution that took place. And so Paul and company took off. He actually landed in Corinth and over some time, and his heart for this church was wondering, number one, how are they doing? And to encourage them, so he penned this letter from Corinth to encourage them. And he sent it with Timothy. So Timothy was the recipient. So you'll sense kind of this defensive posture that he has a little bit. He says this in verse 10, chapter 2. You are witnesses, and God also, how holy and righteous and blameless was our conduct toward you believers. So he's defending his short ministry there because people were attacking it. People were undermining it. People were saying Paul's this or that, or Silas is this or this. And so obviously they get a letter, and if it's being under attack, he's corrupt, he's whatever, then they won't listen to the letter. And so now he's coming out of the gate saying, hold on, let's remember what went on, forget the rumor mills. And he says, you know, you are my witnesses, you saw this. This wasn't reported to you, you experienced this. And what was this? That we were holy. In other words, we were spiritually pure and righteous. That has a moral, legal angle to it. So we didn't break the law. We didn't do anything against the rules. And also, we were blameless. In other words, we were consistent in our conduct. So we weren't on again, off again. We weren't, blowing it over here and trying to cover it over here. We were upright, and you saw that. But he goes on, and he goes on now in explaining how he treated them in terms of a father to a child, which is kind of the interesting piece. Verse 11, for you know how, like a father with his children, so now we're getting a picture of fatherhood here, we exhorted each of you and encouraged you. So Paul's clearly setting himself up as like the spiritual father for this church. And he's basically saying, you know, we were holy, we were blameless, we were kind of, and we exhorted you, and all like a father does to his child. And he describes what fatherhood looks like, or good fatherhood looks like, or better yet, the impact of a father. Because he says this, he says, with these two participles, by the way, exhorting, encouraging, it's ongoing. He said, we exhorted you. What does that have to do? That carries the idea of guidance, instruction, education, mentoring. In fact, the word exhorted there literally means to call to somebody's side. And we encouraged you. In other words, we made this instruction, this learning time, palatable, motivating for you. So good dads provide instruction and encouragement. That's their role. And that's his role with the church, which was like the spiritual family, and he's describing the role of a dad in general. So when we talk about why fathers are so important, number one on your outline, they teach you about life. This is the role of a dad, and I would say God-given role of a dad. It's the natural way dads are dads, is to provide advice, to teach, to help you learn, to navigate life. And I believe this is natural. They can't help it. It's who they are. Earlier in this letter, Paul relates a principle, a spiritual principle to him, in terms of a mother. And look how he frames it this way. 1 Thess 2:7, but we were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also ourselves, because you had become very dear to us. Notice it's the maternal terminology there, that we were gentle. We were affectionately desirous. That's the mom side, and that comes natural for a mom. But the dad side is the exhorting, instruction, teaching piece. And so, you know, it made me think of when I used to go camping with my dad. My dad's the one that taught me how to fish. My dad's the one that taught me how to chop wood. My dad's the one that taught me how to build a fire. And not because, you know, I went up there and, you know, enrolled in a class. It's just I watched him. He just taught me by example and probably showed me some things too. In fact, I was just with my youngest son yesterday, Father's Day. He's a new dad, and we were talking, and he's got a 2-year-old daughter. And I said, you know, or you think you'll ever go camping? And he goes, yeah, I want to. But he says, I'm not sure my wife will be down with it. She probably would be. But the term was, she didn't grow up camping. In other words, the impact wasn't the same. Our kids, if you were at PCC for the last 25 years, you know we went camping like every year. I give you camping stories. And he even said, I have to refresh my skills. How to start that fire. And I remember how to clean that fish. I don't, and he started all reciting all the things he had learned from not his mother, but his dad. I think this is important to really get our arms around, because when dads give advice, remember it's their role. It's their natural God-given role. So I would just say, listen. Listen. He may not do it perfectly. He may not have the right tone. He may not have even the right approach. But to engage with dad and to allow him to share, to ask questions, to ask for his input is stepping into the very thing that was so significant about those statistics when it's not there. Ask him questions. Ask for his help. We talk about fatherless homes. I think the big replacement also that we can overlook is social media. Why would I ask my dad when I can ask ChatGPT? Why would I ask my dad when I can open AI at, right? And then we slowly replace the important presence and role of a father with a fatherless home, but we got ChatGPT. It doesn't help the stats. We're not going to see those turn around in fatherless homes just because we have new software. So that's the way you can, yeah, but man, he goes on and on and on. I know. That's what dads do. They go on and on and on. He's always a know-it-all. Yeah. Yeah, the teachers are always knowing more than their students. Don't shut it down. Don't run away from it. Don't discount it. Engage with it. What a goal today. Wherever you go for food or whatever, this is novel. Ask your dad's opinion. Yeah, but he's so old-fashioned. Get the opinion first, before you discount it or call it irrelevant. But we got more. So, verse 12. We exhorted, so as a father does his child, we exhorted each one of you and encouraged you, okay? But there's more here. And charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God, who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. So Paul highlights that we just weren't sitting there preaching at you in the synagogue. We weren't just giving you information in the synagogue. But we were doing that in order for you to not have more knowledge, but to be transformed by the application of God's word. It's not just information. It's the application. And that's why we do that at PCC. That's why we have grow groups. What do you do at grow groups? You don't get more information. You don't get a new Bible study. You had one here. So what do you get at a grow group? You get the application. Because more information doesn't help anything unless you apply it. If you apply it, then your life changes. Things get better. You grow and you mature by applying information. I don't care what situation you're in. I could show you how to pitch a baseball, but if you don't ever apply what you've been shown, you'll never pitch a baseball. And so he's highlighting this issue spiritually with his church. But he's saying, like a father does with a child, this idea to walk. What does walking mean? It means moving forward, i.e. applying the exhortation and encouragement. It has this pushing component. So why fathers are important, they not only teach you about life, but two, they help you grow up. They help you mature. They help you to step into the unknown, to take risks. It's rare you find a helicopter dad. In fact, that's probably why helicopter moms are so expensive, because you got jump off cliff dads. They're doing this with their kids. Give it a shot, you can do it. Give it a shot, you can do it. Give it a shot, you can do it. And if you're not careful, that can go too far. And Paul highlights this to the Ephesian church. He tells dads, he says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. Bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. In other words, don't go too far in your application and expectations. Find a balance here. So it can go too far. And we know stories about that. Okay, so question, how many of you dads coached your kids' teams? Quite a few of you. Why did you do that? You don't need to answer out loud, but why did you do that? For the love of the sport? Maybe, but to prove that, when your kids left the team, did you leave the team? Or did you keep coaching other kids? When they aged out and moved to the next division, did you say, no, I just love this level of baseball, football, I'm staying right now? No, you left too. You were there for your kids. Because you wanted to be part, and there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. It's very dad-like. Because you wanted to see them progress, grow, and mature. And think about your process. You'd come home from a game, whatever that game was, and it doesn't matter. It could be girls, sports, could be guys, sports. You come home, give them tips, next time work on this, and then what do? You follow up, and you try to, now, obviously it can go too far, where you're vicariously on the team, and you're doing it, and your kids can never do anything right, and you're exasperating them and provoking them to anger, so there's the warning. But that's very dad. Because it's in you by nature to see your kids grow and mature in life, on a team, in business, as a father. The truth of the matter, and when you really think about it then, if their role is to help us grow up, mature, no dad, by definition, is no growth and immaturity. Thus, the stats. It's like going to a gym, and you, like, have no clue about anything in the gym. You see things over there that look heavy, You see ropes over there that look like they should tie up a ship. You don't know what you're doing. So you just walk around and, oh, this looks heavy. Whoa. Oh, okay, that didn't work. You know, what's this rope doing? I don't know, you know. You don't know what you're doing. And so it's a school of hard knocks. And you try to think about that as the metaphor for life. And you know who dad is? Dad's the personal trainer that comes in and says, no, let me show you this. Go ahead, get underneath. Let's start with these weights. Let's push. Okay, that's good. Take a couple weights off. It's too much. And then gives you a routine. To now when you come back to the gym, you know what you're doing. Today we're doing arms. Tomorrow we're doing legs. The next day we're doing, you know, whatever. Because you've been what? You've been coached along and guided along, which is the role of the dad. The dad is the coach of the family. The dad is the personal trainer of the family. The dad brings wisdom and experience to the family. And as we've seen by all our coaches, they can't help it. I used to think, because we, you know, we'd get dads over the years, you know, wanting to help out in youth, our youth ministry. And, you know, why? Because their kids are in youth ministry. And it kind of used to frustrate me. I'd be like, so nepotistic. Can't you just help out? But it's like, no, they can't. They're being dads. And they want to be there with their kids and help them grow and mature. So it's cool. It's how God made you. It's kind of like how God made moms in certain ways that aren't dads. And the significance, here's the deal too, that I think is super important not to lose sight of. The significance of the presence of a father, as the stats highlight when they're not there, goes all the way back to Genesis, when God made Adam. Interesting. And what did he make Adam to do? Work the ground, be a father. But Adam was lacking some things. So who came along? Eve. So you tell me, from a biblical filter, when all it is Eve raising children, what's the significance of that Adam piece? Just even being present. It's huge. So I just want to say this, dads. This isn't going to be a message on how you need to do better. This isn't how you need to try harder and do this and do this and don't do this and keep doing this and correct that. No. Be you and how God made you. Teach your kids. That's being you. It'll come naturally. You'll see it and want to give input. And you be you when you want to encourage them to take those steps, to take those risks. Mom will always kind of bring it back to the careful and bring a balance there. But homes need you to push forward, to be that personal trainer. And unfortunately, the tragedy today of families is fatherless homes. Because God made them to be filled. You're the Adam of your family. We have a little video, kind of a tribute to that theme. Presence is super important. And so we wanted just to honor our dads, the ones that stayed by this tribute. We got a few slides from you guys and dads that were important in your life. And so we got pictures of them to some music, and hopefully it's a blessing to you. Just take a look.